Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you believe in magic? I ask because this week the New York Times had a report on the companies and industries and interest groups that have given money not to Donald Trump's campaign or to his political action committee or to anything like that. No, they've been giving it to MAGA Incorporated, which is not bound by any rules regarding how much can be given, or to another organization linked to MAGA Incorporated, which is not bound by any donor contribution limits or even the necessity to reveal the names of the donors. So there's your magic box. And oddly enough, one of the major contributors to MAGA Incorporated was or were operators in the crypto industry. You've heard of it. I'm sure you've made a lot of money in it. And here's the magic part. Short, a few months later, the Securities and Exchange Commission, under the control of the current administration, has loosened the requirements that were in place to regulate the crypto industry. It's magic. Hello, welcome to the show.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. Wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. And I know, I know, I know, I know. Sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
From Santa Monica, California, home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. How about that? And this is this edition of the show, and I'm welcoming you to it. And now,
looks like must close.
Well, not a great week for the Musker. A Miami jury decided just this late this week that Tesla, the company, is partly responsible for a deadly crash in Florida involving its its autopilot driver assist technology and must pay the victims more than $240 million in damages. Well, he's got that on him. The federal jury held that Tesla bore significant responsibility because its technology failed. That can't happen. And that not all the blame can be put on a reckless driver, even one who admitted he was distracted by his cell phone before hitting a young couple out gazing at the stars. I blame the stars. The decision comes as Musk seeks to convince Americans his cars are safe enough to drive on their own, you know, self-driving. He plans to roll out a driverless taxi service in several cities in the coming months. Watch for one new... Whoa! The decision ends a four-year-long case, remarkable not just in its outcome, but that it even made it to trial, according to the AP. Many similar cases against Tesla have been dismissed when that didn't happen, settled by the company to avoid, you know, making news. Quote, this will open the floodgates, unquote, Miguel Custodia, a car crash lawyer, not involved in this case, but he makes a nice living. He continues, it will embolden a lot of people to come to court, unquote, and I'm sure he's hoping they'll come to him. The case also included startling charges by lawyers for the family of the deceased, claiming Tesla either hid or lost key evidence, including data and video recorded seconds before the accident. Tesla said it made a mistake after being shown the evidence and honestly hadn't thought it was there. You know, when you look for it, quote, we finally learned what happened that night, that the car was actually defective, said the sister of the deceased. Tesla has previously faced criticism that it's slow to cough up crucial data by relatives of other victims in Tesla crashes. Tesla's denied those charges. I can tell you personally, I had an incident, not an accident, just a time when the car ran out of power long before it should have, where I reported it twice. They said they'd check the data and get back to me. And then 5 months later, they called back and said, it's too late to get the data. True story. In this case, the plaintiffs showed that Tesla had the evidence all along, despite its repeated denials, by hiring a forensic data expert who dug it up. That's what I should have done. Quote, today's verdict is wrong, said Tesla. In addition to a punitive award of $200 million, the jury said Tesla must also pay $43 million in compensatory damages for the crash. That adds up to the $243 million, said a financial analyst. It's a big number that will send shockwaves to others in the industry. It's not a good day for Tesla. Unquote. The goal in Elon's head, somewhere in there, of a fully autonomous car that could serve as a robo-taxi is getting a trial this week with a human operator behind the wheel. Well, that's a good test. This according to the Register. This is now 5 years after Musk predicted there would be a million self-driving Tesla taxis on the road. So now they finally launched an invitation-only trial with a handful of modified Model Ys in Austin, Texas last month with an in-car safety monitor. Just to watch. Now Tesla is issuing an invitation for robo-taxi rides in San Francisco, with some important caveats, according to the Register. British Tech Journal, for example, there is a human in the driver's seat. That's opposed to the front passenger seat in the Austin tests. Well, this makes it easier for him to stop! This is most likely because regulators haven't cleared Tesla to run an autonomous driving service in California yet. Musk unveiled a specialized robo-taxi design way last October, claimed the cars would be available below $30,000. Might be possible, because unlike most self-driving vehicles, Tesla eschews using LiDAR. That's a system that fires off laser pulses to map surroundings via 3D point clouds, and instead trusts less expensive cameras. With the Austin launch, this proved less than successful, despite only allowing select early access renters and testers into the cars, including Tesla influencers. They still recorded a number of dangerous mistakes made by the vehicles, including driving down the wrong side of the street and halting in the middle of the road. Well, that's where the great music is. Waymo, already well ahead of the game, but they've involved themselves in several notable accidents over the years, including a fatal dog strike in 2023, a multi-vehicle collision in San Francisco in January, and a case of being set alight during anti-ICE protests in Los Angeles in June. GM's backed autonomous car service Cruise shut down after running over a pedestrian who'd been struck by another car. You remember that story? You heard it here. And from Perth, Western Australia, comes Curtin University. There, researchers have undertaken the world's biggest survey of low-frequency satellite radio emissions, and they found that Starlink satellites, owned by guess who, are significantly interfering with radio astronomy observations, potentially impacting discovery and research. Why, that would slow down our journey to Mars, wouldn't it? News of Musk love. Meanwhile, in news of our friend the atom, a couple of delays in the offing or off the inning. The deadline to glassify the first of the Hanford nuclear site's 56 million gallons of radioactive waste, would you like some, will be extended under an agreement filed in federal court. Work began to build the massive Hanford vitrification plant way back in 2002. The previous deadline set in a federal court dissent decree was last Friday. That was to demonstrate that it could turn radioactive waste into a stable glass form, that the glass met quality standards for disposal. The extension, one of many through the decades, gives the Department of Energy 75 more days till October 15th. The Department of Ecology in Washington State and the Washington, D.C. Department of Energy agreed to the extension. That'll give the Department of Energy and its contractor, Bechtel National, more time to complete testing of equipment and facilities used in waste treatment at the plant. The process of commissioning this first-in-kind facility is comprehensive and dynamic, said the DOE acting manager for the thing. In a memo to employees, he said he expects the extra 75 days to be adequate for the remaining preparations to treat radioactive waste for the first time at the vitrification plant. But if remaining work takes longer than expected, it'll notify the state. And the start of full-scale fuel debris removal from the damaged reactors at Fuuk in Japan, that's now expected to begin 2037 at the earliest, instead of the early 2030s. 5, 10 years, who's got? In units 1 to 3, the fuel and metal cladding that formed the outer jacket of the fuel rods, why, it melted, then re-solidified as fuel debris. There's an estimated total of just 880 tons of fuel debris in units 1 through 3, according to World Nuclear News. To reduce the risk from this fuel debris, preparations are underway for retrieving it from the reactors. That was going to start with Unit 3, from which used nuclear fuel has already been removed. The retrieved fuel debris will be stored in a new storage facility. That's going to be constructed at Fuuk. You know, the future. The TEPCO, the plant operator, succeeded in extracting small samples of fuel debris from Unit 2 in last November and this April, but TEPCO has reportedly concluded after studying the specific removal method, it would take around 12 to 15 years just to prepare for the work. That's some preparation. And no H. The difficulty of retrieving the first handful of debris has become evident, said Toyoshi Fuketa, head of the decommissioning work at the Nuclear Damage Compensation and Decommissioning Facilitation Corporation. Get that name longer, won't you? TEPCO has presented two plans to prepare for the fuel debris removal. One option involves demolishing a radioactive waste disposal building next to Unit 3. Yeah, and the other would keep the building in place. Because, you know, who needs a building for the waste, really, when you stop to think about it? But please don't. News of our friend the atom. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, sadly, saw the passing of a really pretty special talent who gained renown in the late 1950s with an underground 10-inch LP, ask your dad, called Songs by Tom Lehrer. He was and remained, I think, until his death. Maybe he retired, but he was for a long time a professor of mathematics, first on the East Coast and then at, University of California campus at Santa Cruz. But his hobby, which later became his occupation for quite a while, was writing and performing satirical songs. And sort of as our own personal farewell today, I'm sharing a few of them with you, if in case you haven't heard them before. This is Tom Lehrer.
From the Bible to the popular song, there's one theme that we find right along. Of all ideals they hail as good, the most sublime is motherhood. There was a man, though, who it seems once carried this ideal to extremes. He loved his mother and she loved him, and yet his story is rather grim. Once lived a man named Oedipus Rex. You may have heard about his odd complex. His name appears in Freud's index, 'cause he loved his mother. His rivals used to say quite a bit that as a monarch he was most unfit, but still in all they had to admit that he loved his mother. Yes, he loved his mother like no other. His daughter was his sister and his son was his brother. One thing on which you can depend is he sure knew who a boy's best friend is. When he found what he had done, he tore his eyes out one by one. A tragic end to a loyal son who loved his mother. So be sweet and kind to mother now and then. Have a chat. Buy her candy or some flowers or a brand new hat. But maybe you had better let it go at that. Or you may find yourself with a quite complex complex, and you may end up like Oedipus. I'd rather marry a duck-billed platypus than end up like old Oedipus Rex.
And now, in the same key, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. The Tokyo High Court this week upheld a lower court ruling ordering the advertising firm Dentsu Group to pay $2 million in fines over bid rigging related to the last Olympics way back in Tokyo in 2021. The court also maintained a lower court's ruling that sentenced Koji Henmi, former assistant head of the sports department of Dentsu, to 2 years in prison, 4 years suspension. The company and Henmi appealed the high court decision the same day. According to lower and high court rulings, he conspired with a 58-year-old former senior official of the organizing committee for the Games and others to pre-select the winners of contracts for planning Olympic and Paralympic events, test events, and managing venues for the actual competition. You know, just a little Olympic crookedness. Meantime, overtime for Los Angeles police officers and any other major expenses for the Olympic Games in Southern California would be, according to the still struggling but existent LA Times, would be acutely felt by a city government that recently closed a nearly $1 billion budget deficit, in part by slowing police hiring. The city continues to face rising labor costs and diminished revenues from tourism. But the Olympics will fix that. LA 28, the organizing committee, has billed the games as a no-cost event for the city. Depending on how enhanced services are defined, the city could end up bearing significant costs. In the big, beautiful bill, there's $1 billion for security and planning of the games. Who knew that? But what those funds will cover, not yet known. Against that backdrop, civil rights attorney Connie Rice sent a six-page letter to the mayor and other city leaders asking questions about that agreement and urging the city to take a tough stance. Rice said city staffers reached out to her because they were worried the agreement wouldn't adequately protect the city. Los Angeles faces multiple fiscal hazards that many current leaders negotiating this under Olympics agreements will not be around to face. She wrote, the city cannot afford an additional $1.5 billion hit in 2028 because city officials inadequately protected taxpayers in 2025. The letter questioned why LA 28 isn't paying the city up front for costs using money it has in escrow. She says she wants to ensure the games are indeed no cost. Both the mayor's major events officer and a representative of the LA 28 committee declined to directly respond. No cost is low cost is no cost when it's the Olympics. It's a movement, and we all need one. Every day. And stay out. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the crypto winter. I know it feels hot here, but in crypto, customers at Abra, a crypto lender which claims to manage more than $700 million, what are these dollars, are raising the alarm, the customers are, after the platform told some users it is paused withdrawals. It's Abra, but no Kadabra. Quote, we want to inform you that Abra Earn International Services are currently paused, effective immediately. Said an email, this decision is part of our broader risk management effort and is also influenced by external circumstances outside of our control, unquote, according to DL News. It's not clear what those external circumstances are. Abra paid out millions last year to settle alleged U.S. regulatory violations. The situation highlights the uncertainty involved in using platforms like Abra because of the lack of which offer customers lucrative yields on their crypto assets through a combination of decentralized finance activities and often unsecured lending. Several similar platforms, your Celsius, your BlockFi, your Finblox, blew up in 2022 after borrowers defaulted on loans. And that cost customers billions of dollars in losses. Reports that customers weren't receiving scheduled payments and couldn't withdraw their funds started appearing online in early June. In recent reviews in Trustpilot, those impacted reported the firm's customer service representatives cut them off and ignored their request to know why they can no longer access their funds. In response to those reviews in Trustpilot, the official Abra account came up with this original lingo. We appreciate you taking the time to leave this review. Your feedback means a lot to us. Unquote. The reports that users can't withdraw their funds come just a year after Abra reached a settlement with 25 U.S. states over claims it had operated its business without the required licenses to handle crypto activities. It was required to refund $82 million to U.S. customers after halting services in this country in 2023. The states involved in the settlement all agreed to forego fines in order for customers to be fully repaid. The SEC declined to comment because, you know, they're now in bed. Nice and comfy. In June 2023, the Texas State Securities Board accused Abra of securities fraud, alleging the firm misled investors through the sales of crypto yield products. The board also said Abra had been insolvent or nearly insolvent at the time of the case. The platform said the allegations were untrue. In November 2023, the British Financial Conduct Authority warned Abra was not authorized to offer its services in the country, advised against dealing with the firm. And last year, a settlement with the state of Georgia's Banking and Finance Department ordered that the head of Abra, a gentleman by the name of Barhight, be personally liable to return funds to U.S. customers. That all sounds wintry. And now here, a Tornado Cash user, it's another crypto outfit, hacked the contract of NFT gallery firm Super Rare this week, stealing roughly $730,000 worth of tokens that are called RARE, Rare. The crypto security analysts at PeckShield first noticed the substantial loss. Cyber's Alerts reported the attacker had previously used crypto mixer Tornado Cash 186 days ago. Slow Mist, they just can't help themselves coming up with these names, claims the exploit was caused by a faulty permission check in the update Merkle root function that allowed the hacker to modify the staking contract and claim tokens for themselves. Super Rare is an NFT art firm. Yeah, they're still around. Multiple physical galleries in New York. What pays that rent? The firm has generated over $325 million in trading volume, since it was founded in 2018 and created the Rare token in 2023. Shark Tank presenter Mark Cuban lost $870,000 worth of crypto, including a batch of those tokens, when he unknowingly downloaded a fake MetaMask wallet application that drained his wallet. You'd think he'd know better. The website Protos.com, which reported this story, says there's a chance this exploiter will use Tornado Cash again and attempt to launder their ill-gotten gains. The crypto mixer, I guess that's Tornado Cash, is hailed by crypto privacy advocates for anonymizing crypto transactions. It's also popular with hackers attempting to launder any illegally obtained crypto. And finally, Spot crypto exchange funds, exchange traded funds, saw a sharp reversal this week, with both Bitcoin and Ethereum products recording their second largest daily outflows of the year. Investors pulled $812 million from Bitcoin funds, second only to the $1.15 billion outflow in late February. Ethereum things lost $153 million, ending a record 20-day inflow streak. Brr. What a crypto winner.
Be prepared. That's the Boy Scouts marching song. Be prepared. As through life you march along, be prepared to hold your liquor pretty well. Don't write naughty words on walls if you can't spell. Be prepared to hide that pack of cigarettes. Don't make book if you cannot cover bets. Keep those reefers hidden where you're sure that they will not be found. And be careful not to smoke them when the scoutmaster's around, for he only will insist that they be shared. Be prepared. That's the Boy Scout's solemn creed. Be prepared and be clean in word and deed. Don't solicit for your sister, that's not nice, unless you get a good percentage of her price. Be prepared and be careful not to do your good deeds when there's no one watching you. If you're looking for adventure of a new and different kind, and you come across a Girl Scout who is similarly inclined, don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be scared. Be prepared.
Direct from where the new Trump ballroom will dwarf the White House, this is the world's favorite president with another edition of Trump Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Paint. It covers everything up. This week started with the lunatics and the lunatic fake media making a mountain out of a smaller mountain over my explanation of why I broke off with this Eckstein character everybody's talking about too much. And I said he was stealing my employee from Mar-a-Lago, which, as you know, was true at the time. And the maniacs with the cameras and the microphones and the whatever thought that was somehow insulting to this extremely beautiful young girl with such great skin to say she was stolen. But here's the truth. As you know, I say that about all my employees when they're poached. It's a, you could call it a threat of love, of love. I didn't know her, as you know, but the people who did say that she didn't want to be stolen, and I would have said that to Jeffrey if I still knew him, which I didn't, as you know. But meantime, something so much more important than Jeffrey, who just stopped me from what I was doing to help the very young girls who worked for me and who I would never have stolen from him. But this more important thing, which we all should be talking about instead of extremely attractive young girls, is the rigging of the numbers from the so-called Bureau of Labor Statistics, or as I call it, the Bureau of Liberal Statistics. As you know, this week, I fired the woman who was rigging the numbers about unemployment and GDP, the great domestic product. She was rigging like nobody has ever seen, like nobody's ever rigged. The fake media won't tell you this, but the Democrat Party is a party of riggers. I know you're not supposed to use that word anymore, but after Russia, 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 and now BLS, 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 all I can say is these horrible and very stupid people are going to have to do their rigging somewhere else, as long as I'm your president, which could be for a very long time, as you know. I'll speak to you again before you know it, but not before I do. Stay loyal.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Butter, where the cows do the rigging. So long.
Do you trust the steel or fear the spark? Can you feel the pulse in the dark? AI is great. It's a new debate. No time to wait. Let's automate. Every ending's just a new beginning.
Well, this is a new beginning. An AI song created by AI. Don't tell Ralph. Meta is plowing tens of billions of dollars into processing data centers the size of Manhattan Island, according to the Register, the British Tech Journal. And yet the social network has struggled to upstage rivals like OpenAI or Anthropic. So Zuckerberg is moving the goalpost, refocusing his efforts on a nebulous new target, AI superintelligence. Super! Over the last few months, we've begun to see glimpses of our AI systems improving themselves, he wrote in a blog post. What else are they doing to themselves? The improvement is slow for now, he said, but undeniable. Developing superintelligence is now in sight. Unquote. There's not much consensus on what exactly constitutes AI superintelligence. Zuckerberg's post offers little clarity on the matter. Meta not only aims to build it, but instead wants to give everyone their own personal superintelligence to enrich their lives. Unlike all the other superintelligences, Zuckerberg insists Meta's isn't trying to put you off a job. Instead, will empower users by pursuing their individual aspirations. Quote, personal superintelligence that knows us deeply, stop right there, babe, understands our goals and can help us achieve them will be by far the most useful, he said. He was the creator, as you know, of a social network designed to rate the attractiveness of his Harvard co-eds. Microsoft has upgraded Azure AI speech so that users can rapidly generate voice replicas with just a few seconds of sampled speech. This also from the Register. The personal voice feature became generally available late May last year. It was impressive, but required some training to get the best out of it. According to Microsoft, the feature has now been upgraded to a model named Dragon V2.1 Neural with more natural sounding and expressive voices. It will also generate audio in any of more than 100 languages. Microsoft said the upgrade compared to the previous model brings improvements to the naturalness of speech, offering more realistic and stable prosody while maintaining better pronunciation accuracy. This unquote, the system, which was already pretty good, is now even more accurate, says the Register. This capability unlocks a wide range of applications, quoting Microsoft, from customizing chatbot voices to dubbing video content in an actor's original voice across multiple languages. Unquote. It could also be a boon for people with goals that may be malicious or deceptive. In addition to watermarks to make the generated audio easier to identify, although not by human ears, Microsoft insists all customers must agree to our usage policies, which include requiring explicit consent from the original speaker, disclosing the synthetic nature of the content created, and prohibiting impersonation of any person or deceiving people using the personal voice service. Okay, takes care of that, doesn't it? And a first-of-its-kind study from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, what do they know, shows some concerning findings on how AI affects brain activity. This occurs as all Ohio State University students, it's actually the Ohio State University, will be trained to use AI in their majors. This is from a public radio station in Ohio, WOSU. The study found those who use ChatGPT to help write essays showed less brain activity than those who used only their brain. Ohio State did not study how artificial intelligence usage affects learning before rolling out plans to make all students AI fluent, like it's a language. Ohio State wants to embed AI into the core of the undergraduate curriculum, equipping students with the ability to not only use AI tools, but to understand, question, and innovate with them. MIT's researcher Natalia Kosmina said the study was small and hasn't yet been peer-reviewed. It's the first to study how AI could impact learning. The MIT study showed lower brain activity in AI users and, quote, soulless, unquote, essays. Kosmina and her team invited 54 college students between the ages of 18 and 34 from the Boston area to participate in the study, split into three groups and assigned to complete SAT-style essays while their brain activity was monitored. One was allowed to use ChatGPT only. They couldn't use anything else. Another group was allowed to use search engines. The third group was only able to use their brain. The essays weren't complicated. They didn't need any prior knowledge. Topics were things like, is there perfect society or what is happiness? The study found that while these students wrote, the chatter happening in the brain between neurons went down as each tool was introduced. Students using ChatGPT showed the lowest brain activity. The ChatGPT participants couldn't even accurately recall their own essays. The essays were also reviewed by English teachers who didn't know what technology was used for each. The AI papers were criticized as unoriginal, or as English teachers put it, soulless. Now, speaking of soulless, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Daily Beast this week removed a story based on a podcast interview that the outlet's chief creative officer conducted days ago with the author of Fire and Fury, Michael Wolff. In the interview, Wolff said that Donald Trump met Melania Trump through a modeling agent whom Jeffrey Epstein knew, but the story posted on the outlet's website apparently missed some of the nuance from the interview. Quote, the story was deleted because it did not reflect the comments made by Michael Wolff on the Daily Beast podcast, said a spokesperson. In an editor's note, the outlet added, quote, after the story was published, the Beast received a letter from First Lady Melania Trump's attorney challenging the headline and framing of the article. After reviewing the matter, the Beast has taken down the article and apologizes for any confusion or misunderstanding, unquote. The original podcast remains on YouTube. This from User Mag. Substack sent a push alert encouraging users to subscribe to a Nazi newsletter that claimed Jewish people are a sickness and that we must eradicate minorities to build a white homeland. The site NatSec Today describes itself as a weekly newsletter featuring opinions and news important in the National Socialist and White Nationalist community. Unquote. The push alert was sent to an undisclosed number of users' phones beginning of the week. Some people posted about the app alert on social media, confused why they were being prompted to subscribe to a Nazi blog. Moreover, anyone who clicked on the newsletter's profile saw recommendations for other white nationalist publications. Substack said the alert was an accident. Quote, we discovered an error that caused some people to receive push notifications they shouldn't have received, the company told author Taylor Lorenz. In some cases, they continued, these notifications were extremely offensive or disturbing. This was a serious error, and we apologize for the distress it caused. We have taken the relevant system offline for a technological spanking, diagnosed the issue, and are making changes to ensure it doesn't happen again, unquote. That makes room for a different mistake to happen. The head football coach of Baylor University, Dave Aranda, opened his fall camp press conference this week with a public apology for comments he made last week at the Texas High School Coaches Association convention, where he used a derogatory term while referencing a scene from the film Wolf of Wall Street. I wanted to say last time we spoke I had a misstep and hurt a bunch of people, so I apologize for that, Aranda said. That was not what I intended to come across, so I'm sorry for that, unquote. He faced mounting criticism after quoting a scene from the film in which characters discuss exploiting little people for entertainment. In his remarks at the event, Aranda said, quote, there's a scene in The Wolf of Wall Street where they talk about throwing midgets. It's like, hey, this midget can be roll. Can he roll there? And you go, no, he doesn't roll. You throw him. They're made for throwing. And then after a while, they go, well, you know what? I think if you start talking, they may think we're making fun of them. The midgets may think we're making fun of them. They may get mad at us, unquote. The term midget is widely considered a slur by those with dwarfism. The British female soccer team's hero, Chloe Kelly, they're called the Lionesses and they just won world championship, has apologized for letting her, quote, emotions get the better of me, unquote, after she swore on live TV during their 2025 celebrations in London following their victory at Euro 2025. The 27-year-old forward for Arsenal, that's a team, she scored the winning penalty in Sunday's dramatic shootout victory over Spain. Dramatic, said the expletive after the bus parade down the mall in London. asked by BBC presenter Alex Scott about her nerves before taking the decisive penalty kick. She replied in front of tens of thousands of fans, "Pressure? What pressure? It feels so good to stand side by side next to all these girls throughout the tournament. I know it's everyone that comes for us to support us, whether that's in Switzerland or here today. It's so effing special." Unquote. Scott had to quickly step in to apologize for the obscenity. "So I would apologize for that language," Kelly continued. "Everyone knows what it takes to win it, but it's so hard to win it. It's special to be here today. I'm so proud to be English." She later posted on Instagram to apologize for her language. "Oops! Emotions got the better of me. Sorry for the F-bomb. Love." Some branded her an absolute disgrace for having sworn in front of an audience in person and at home, which would contain thousands of little girls. Others said she was a legend. Or a legend. Delta Airlines issued an apology this week after a harrowing episode of turbulence that sent 25 people to hospitals and forced an international flight to make an emergency landing in Minneapolis. Delta Flight 56, an Airbus 330-900, was traveling from Salt Lake City to Amsterdam Wednesday evening when it encountered what the airline described as significant turbulence over Wyoming. It diverted to Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Emergency crews met the flight upon arrival. Of the 25 people injured, 7 were Delta crew, 18 were passengers. "They hit the ceiling and then they fell to the ground," said one passenger. "And the carts also hit the ceiling and fell to the ground and people were injured. It happened several times, so it was really scary." The airline is cooperating with the National Transportation Safety Board. A replacement flight was scheduled for the next day. "Safety is our number one value at Delta," the airline said. "We appreciate the response and support of first responders in caring for our customers and crew." Its Delta Care team had personally contacted passengers to assist with immediate needs and onward travel. While such injury remain rare, such injuries, turbulence-related incidents have made headlines in recent months amid concerns that climate change may be increasing their frequency. But they apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news of the godly. A mass grave that could hold up to nearly 800 infants and young children, some of it in a defunct septic tank, is being excavated on the grounds of the former home in the Irish town of Tuam, run by the Montsecours sisters, an order of nuns. The burial site has forced Ireland and the Catholic Church, long central to its identity, Irish identity, to reckon with a legacy of having shunned unmarried mothers and separated them from their children, left at the mercy of a cruel system. That's from the AP. The grave was accidentally discovered by two boys a half century ago, but the true horror of the place was not known until a local historian began digging into the home's history. Catherine Corliss, the historian, revealed the site was atop a septic tank and that 796 deceased infants were unaccounted for. Her findings caused a scandal when the international news media wrote about her work about 10 years ago, when test excavations later confirmed an untold number of tiny skeletons in the sewage pit. The then Prime Minister of Ireland, Enda Kenny, called it a chamber of horrors. Pope Francis later apologized for the church's crimes that included forced separations of unwed mothers and children. The nuns apologized for not living up to their Christianity. The homes were not unique to Ireland, followed a Victorian-era practice of institutionalizing the poor, troubled and neglected children, and unmarried mothers. The Tuam home was cold, crowded, and deadly. Mothers worked there for up to a year before being cast out, almost always without their children. Corliss' report led to a government investigation that found 9,000 children died in mother and baby homes in the 20th century. The Tuam home, opened from 1925 to 1961, had the highest death rate. Corliss said she was driven to expose the story. The more I realized how those poor, unfortunate, vulnerable kids, through no fault of their own, had to go through this, unquote. Her work brought together survivors of the homes and children who discovered their mothers had given birth to long-lost relatives who died there. Annette McKay, one of them, said there's still a level of denial about the abuse, rape, and incest that led some women to the homes, while fathers were not held accountable. And Dateline Chicago, a Peruvian survivor of clergy sex abuse, brought her public campaign for reforms to the American hometown of Pope Leo the 14th this week. That would be Chicago, saying he failed in investigating her case when he was a bishop in her home country. Needs to step up now as leader of the world's Catholics. Quote, I've been quiet since the Pope has been elected, said Ana Maria Quispe Diaz in Spanish at a news conference in downtown Chicago. But she adds, I'm not planning to be quiet forever. She appeared with members of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. That group sent a letter to the Pope this week, renewing demands for more accountability on clergy sex abuse complaints and released documents related to Diaz's case. News of the godly.
Among the things they did in an attempt to make the church more commercial was to introduce the vernacular into portions of the Mass to replace Latin and to widen somewhat the range of music permissible in the liturgy. But I feel that if they really want to sell the product in this secular age, what they ought to do is to redo some of the liturgical music in popular song forms. I have a modest example here. It's called The Vatican Rag. First you get down on your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Whatever steps you want, if you have cleared them with the pontiff, everybody say his own, Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican rag. Get in line in that processional, step into that small confessional, they're the guy who's got religion, I'll tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer, drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8, time to transubstantiate. So get down upon your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make a cross on your abdomen, when in Rome do like a Roman. Ave Maria, gee, it's good to see you, getting ecstatic and sort of dramatic and doing the Vatican
rag.
gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Program returns next week, same time, same station, if you're listening to us on the radio, and on your audio device of choice, whenever you want it. Because that's just the way we roll. And it would be delightful to roll with you, in that sense, of course. The tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, to the Hawaii desk, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The chance of a lifetime to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, along with the playlist of the music heard here on, all at harryshearer.com, where there's so much stuff to read and watch and listen to that even I can't stand it. But you will. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.